Today, let's talk financial advising, retirement and tax strategy. Where do you put your money? The good, the bad, and the ugly. Because today will help you build your legacy with the fire on the wall.
Welcome, everybody. This is another episode of Fly on the Wall Finance. I'm your host, Jamie Malm from Iron Horse Financial. And we are talking today about something that probably we think doesn't apply to most of us, which is what do the wealthy people do to build their financial freedom, or what have they done, I should say. So we're going to dive into is it really luck? Was it a windfall? Were they born into it? Or how do these wealthy retirees actually become wealthy? Thankfully, there's some tips I think we can actually use. But before we jump into that, I want to introduce my co-host, Tony Shore. Nice to have you.
Oh, thank you, Jamie, for having me on the show once again. And I am excited to be here because I can't wait to hear what habits the wealthy have, what's helped them get where they are at, and what can help, better yet, what can help me and our listeners get there. So I'm looking forward to your take on this one. This is an interesting topic. I mean, I know that you are going to have Warren Buffett on the show as a guest for this show.
Yeah, next week.
His habit. Yeah, we'll see if we can't get him on for next week's show.
I'm sure he's not busy.
Yeah. So, but at any rate, I'm great. My oldest daughter's birthday was yesterday. She turned 23. My Wonderful. Youngest daughter's birthday is tomorrow. She turns 21. So that's scary.
Big party.
Yeah, that's the scary age, right? Yep. So anyway, that's my life right now. How about you, Jamie? What's going on over there? Your husband Brad, great guy. Your kids, are you busy?
I have found that parenting adult children is proving to be maybe harder than when they were at home and I at least had some semblance of control. So yep. That's the stage of life we're in right now.
I agree. All three of my kids are either, well, one of them still in college. The other two are out. The other two are pretty good. The youngest, who's turning 21, I should add, who's still in college and we're trying to keep her there. Mm-hmm. That's a little scary, right?
Yep. It's, I should say adult-ish kids, maybe not adult kids, but yeah, it's a different era of parenting for sure. So we're in the thick of it, but all good stages. So the topic for today, I think, is so interesting because I think just as humans have a tendency to think, oh, well, they have a different situation than me, or they have this or that, you know, allowed them to be able to accomplish something that we think is out of reach for us. There was an article recently called The Smart Way to Retire, and it was 13 habits to steal from the wealthy. So we're going to lean on that article a little bit, and we're going to go through those 13 habits.
Yeah, good. Good. Well, I'm interested to dig right in because obviously I think we can all learn a lot from the habits of the wealthy. So, you know, especially anyone looking to create and protect wealth for their own retirement, right?
Yep. I think the first thing that we look at, number one, if you look at what people have done that have built wealth, they pay themselves first. They make it automatic. So rather than saving whatever happens to be left over at the end of the month, they decide up front what percentage of my income am I going to set aside? And before I even have a chance to do anything with it, that's removed from the equation. So benchmark would be like 15%. If anybody follows like Dave Ramsey, he'll give you that 15% benchmark.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's funny you mentioned Dave Ramsey. I've heard him talk about this. So you've got to treat your savings like a bill you can't skip, and you have to pay yourself first. In other words, before you pay any of your other bills or put the money in checking, some of that money has to go immediately into a separate savings account that you can't touch or don't touch.
Right? Yep, before you ever see it. Now, if you think about it, doing like a 401k contribution or something like that, well, you're doing that pre-tax. So there's some advantage there too. We talk a lot about Roths, and so every situation is different. We really want to have a balance of both, but think about paying your future self. This is investing in you. I would say 15%, kind of the benchmark, but 10%, 20%, whatever your number is, if you look at studies and stats that have been shown on people who automate their savings and people that don't or haven't in the past, those that are automating it, even with a smaller amount, because they're doing it consistently, are ending up with bigger balances than if I'm just, hey, I'm trying to save when I feel like this is a month where I've got some breathing room.
Yeah. And that makes sense. And I think that's the beauty of it. And once you get into this habit of paying yourself first, that's really good. Keep that going. I know that's something my wife and I struggled with, Jamie. We would put that money into our checking account. Like, we wanted to build an emergency fund. So we'd put money into our checking thinking, okay, when we pay our bills and done all the necessities, then what's left we're going to put into an emergency fund savings account. And that didn't work. Why didn't that work? Because my checking account is like the government's general fund. I don't know if your state's anything like the state where I grew up, but if money goes into the general fund, poof, it's gone. It's like magic. It just disappears and it's gone.
Yeah, it's human nature. We spend typically what's available to us. And so if we're trying constantly to save what's left over, we're always going to be falling behind. So pay yourself first. And then I think once you get in the habit of that, once you feel like you have that well established, the next thing that we want to think about is if your money is actually working for you. So just like you said, having money sit in a checking account, let's say we're paying ourselves first, but we've got maybe cash that's piling up. Maybe we think, oh, look how well I'm doing. I'm getting ahead. I'm actually not spending it. I've got this emergency fund that's well more than I am actually going to need. That's not necessarily a good position to be in either. We want to make sure every dollar has a job. And if it's just sitting and it's not doing something for you, then it's not, your money isn't working for you, which is what we want to see happen.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like putting your money, even the emergency fund, you put it where it can earn the most money, at least like a high yield savings account. So what you're saying is wealthy people, this habit is their money is always working for them as much as possible, getting as much growth out of everything as possible, earning as much on it as possible. Is that what you're saying?
Yep. And it has a job. So the job of our emergency fund is liquidity primarily. The job of the emergency fund is I don't want to have to go take a, you know, run up a credit card bill, or I don't want to have to go take a line on my extra home equity line or something if I have a water heater that goes out or four tires or whatever happens. That's the emergency fund, 3 to 6 months of interest. If we have more than that hanging around in a cash account, then we are actually losing money with inflation being, let's just call an average 2 to 3%. If we're not at least making 2 to 3%, then we're just losing money. So we've got to think about what the job is of each dollar, and then we put it to work for ourselves.
Yeah. Making your money work for you. Right. And that's what they do. So, that can make a big difference. So, and $1,000 can grow quite a bit just by putting it somewhere smarter.
Yep. So liquidity versus growth versus what are we doing? That's the thing that we want to look at for every dollar having a job. The third thing is wealthy people live below their means. And this might seem counterintuitive because this is a mindset I think we have that, well, if I'm wealthy, I can just buy the things I want to buy. I can spend whatever I want to spend. And that's actually not the mindset that wealthy people have about spending money.
Wait, Jamie, you're not saying I have to live within my means? I can't spend more than I make? What?
I know. I probably oversimplified that. So what
no,
I mean.
No, I'm not saying that per se, but I'm just saying that most people don't want to think about that. They want to be able to, and most of us end up living beyond our means because of things like lifestyle creep. Because like you said, a lot of people assume because once you have money, you can just spend it freely. But that's not how the smart, wealthy people actually operate or keep any of their money, right?
And it's tempting because when we have the money to spend, we can think about, well, I set aside my 10 or 15%. I've got my emergency fund. And now as I start to get ahead a little bit, if I have the ability to go spend more, that lifestyle that we want to keep up with the neighbors and we want to get a bigger house, we want to upgrade, we want a new car every 2 to 3 years, we end up just, we're spending what we take in. We're not utilizing that to keep wealth accumulation on track. And that's really what we want is, what are we working toward, right? And if we've got the money and we have the ability to get ahead a little bit, let's invest that wisely. Let's use that wisely. Let's not let our desire to continually upgrade our lifestyle take that off track.
Yeah. That's really good. And because even at higher income levels, then it really comes down to discipline, like living on, say, 70 to 80% of what you bring in and saving the rest, right?
Yeah, it's, you've got to set aside that amount that you're going to say, this is what my budget is. This is what my expenses are. And as soon as we get away from that, that's when we're getting ourselves off track. And wealthy people, if you talk to them, if you really have a chance to sit down and say, how did you get here? What did you do? They were very intentional. This didn't happen by accident. It's funny because, well, you know, if you've ever had an opportunity to talk to somebody that does have some wealth, we kind of laugh because they're typically the most frugal people. And I have to say, well, that's probably why they're wealthy. Like they didn't get that way because they were just out spending willy-nilly and not paying attention to how they were using their funds. So it's not that exciting, not that fun, you know, no, it's not that flashy, but that's what builds that future financial freedom. And it's how most people, unless they did just fall into a crazy windfall, or if they were just born into it and they didn't have to build their own wealth, if they're building their own, that's a big part in how they did it.
Sure. So what's the next one? What's another big difference between people who build wealth and those who struggle?
So this is going to seem like a no-brainer also, but steer clear of costly debt. Usually people think about credit card debts. And so I may meet with people and they'll be like, oh, nope, I don't have any debt. Well, except we did take out this extra home equity line on our mortgage. And I look at it, I'm like, that's a variable rate and you're paying 8-9%. No, it's not the 22% that you may be paying on your average credit card, but you've got to think about how math works. If I'm paying 8 or 9%, then I'm losing out, not just on the money that I have to pay that back, but on the interest then that I'm paying. You've got to overcome that then in other areas. So you really want to avoid debt as much as possible. Yeah. And if you can, and I realize this is counterintuitive, we've talked about this a little bit to what Dave Ramsey does. He does the snowball method where you take the smallest balance, you pay it off, you get to the next balance. I like that method because it teaches people to pay off debt. But if you're somebody that just has maybe a student loan, maybe a home equity line, you consider yourself somebody that doesn't really have debt. And yet, if you look at it, you do pay
you
off.
Probably have a lot.
Pay off the higher interest rate first, if possible. Or if you have a variable note or something that's coming due, pay attention to when that comes due and when your payment may change, because that's what sucks us in then into, oops, I didn't plan as well as I thought I did. Now I'm starting to see this is taking me off track a little bit. And what I thought was going to be no big deal, I just wanted new windows for the house, or I wanted that addition, this seemed like a good deal. Now it's really draining what I'm able to build for myself for future wealth.
Yeah. So, I like the avalanche method versus the snowball method too. And what you just described as the avalanche method, take the highest interest rate debts, pay those off first. It's probably going to be a bigger monthly payment anyway. And then once that's paid off, you'll have that monthly payment money that you were using to pay off the next one. And that'll go much quicker because it'll get paid off sooner. And I think it's a little quicker way to pay off debt, and you get rid of those interest rates. So financially it's helping you. You're going to save money in the long run doing it that way, right?
Yep. And with either method, avalanche or snowball, the key component is if you have more than one line of debt, soon as that first one is paid off, we take whatever that payment was and we immediately roll it to the next one. We don't ever want to start putting that money back into the general fund, as you said, because then poof, it's gone. So
yep.
Once you pay it off, roll it to the next one.
Yep. And that checking account, for most people, it's their checking account. When something hits that checking account, it's going to get spent, at least for my wife and I. For our family, if it hits the checking account, it gets spent. So we have to purposely put money other places where we don't spend it. Now, we've talked about a lot of habits that wealthy people have. How can someone like yourself, a financial professional, help people develop some of these habits?
Yep. We actually talk a lot about this, usually with our younger clientele, but really what we're starting is a personalized plan. One, how much do we really need to set up in that automatic savings? What helps them hit their goals? And we don't want to just pick a number and say, well, let's just do that. If we have the ability to be specific with it, then let's figure out what is the amount based on how many more years you're going to work that you actually need to be putting away to hit your goals. Then we look at strategies to pay off debt. Where is that going to come from? And then our job is to help them stay on track, stay disciplined, make adjustments where needed, and just make that steady progress toward retirement goals and then adjust as needed along the way.
Right. Yeah. I think that's huge. And I know that this is something you've helped a lot of people out with when you do their overall financial planning and retirement planning. So if our listeners out there want to get a hold of you, Jamie, and set up that no charge, no obligation consultation, how can they do that?
Yep. Easiest place is just to go online, go to ironhorsefinancialservices.com and click the book now button. You can just pick a time that works for you. That'll link directly to our calendar, or you can call the office 620-377-6456. We're happy just to sit down, have a conversation, help you put some initial plans together where you feel really confident about the next steps that you're taking.
Awesome. So some of the habits that wealthy people have that you've talked about so far are pay yourself first, keep your money working for you, live below your means, avoid costly debt. Some of it sounds like common sense, but you got to dig into how they do it. And you did a good job explaining that. And then get guidance, work with trusted financial services professionals. The wealthy do, and you should as well. No matter, you say, well, I'm not wealthy, I don't need a financial services professional, but you do. And if you've got a 401k or an IRA, if you're saving for retirement, you want to avoid those costly mistakes. But what's next? What do you have for us next, Jamie?
Yep. I think one of the things that is so helpful to talk to an expert in this area about is, what are the things that could derail this? What are some of the unexpected things that may come up that I need to plan for? What's the tax diversification that I should be looking at? How does that impact not just me on a year-to-year basis, but what should I account for then in the future when I am ready to start utilizing this money? What does that look like? And that's a big piece of it that we just don't get anymore. I can't tell you how many times I'll sit down with, you know, a new client for the first time and they're like, I don't know. I mean, we've had somebody from HR swing by once a year, talk to us about what the allocation options are. Otherwise, I just kind of put in whatever the match was, and that's where I ended up where I am. And if you had a little more guidance, a little more structure, you could be a little more intentional, then we're probably in a much better position. And that's what some of the research shows too. When we look back at how did the wealthy people get wealthy, they met regularly with somebody that helped refine their strategies, optimize investments, catch some of those blind spots that you might miss on your own, and get that intentional plan in place.
Yeah. Get a plan in place. I think that's so important. And you mentioned taxes. That's a huge area that the wealthy utilize to save and make money is by planning ahead, doing future tax planning. In other words, not just doing the taxes for the last year, but looking ahead on how these things, how investments are affected by taxes, how their IRAs are going to be affected by taxes, how their retirement income is affected. So taxes is a big one. And I think future tax planning, looking down the road, you know, a lot of people have a tax preparer or a CPA they work with each year to do. Then they look back at last year's taxes. And maybe some people make a few moves toward the end of the year, but that's not what we're talking about here, is it? We're talking about looking at the future and planning, okay, if I make this investment or put my money here, how is that, how can I save, or how will that cost me money in taxes, right?
Right. It's one of the reasons we feel so strongly about our partnership with our tax planning firm, Simmons & Simmons. They work with all of our clients directly because we want that cohesive approach to whatever we're putting in place. We want the tax component of it to be something that we're proactive with. CPAs, tax preparers, they typically are just recording whatever's happened in the past. They're not making recommendations for how does this fit into your financial plan moving forward. So that's a huge piece of it that we want to look at. And that can be really overwhelming as you're looking at, well, do I do a Roth IRA? What's if I'm self-employed? Should it be a SEP? Is it a simple? Now you've got Roth simple. I've got Roth 401k. Do I need to mix these up? Is there a break-even point that I need to be considering? Somebody that can sit down with you and do that analysis to say, here are the pros and cons. Here's what fits you best this year. Also might not be the best move for you next year. It's kind of a moving target based on how your income changes, your financial situation changes, especially if you're self-employed, you know, our farmers, our ranchers, our small business owners, that is going to be a moving target year to year that you really need somebody that's keeping a close eye on that to say, here are your opportunities this year. Here are the things that we need to be cautious of moving forward. It plays such a big role.
Oh, that's huge. It really does. And so what's another one that we need to look out for here?
I think spending just overall, which is what we've kind of talked about. But if you think about a 50-30-20 rule, 50% for needs, 30% for wants, 20% savings or debt. Once you're retired, that starts to adjust a little bit. So we're having a, you know, we have a structure that works for us while we're in the accumulation phase of our financial lives, while we're saving, you know, then maybe we're, you know, maybe not quite spending as much, we're saving more. When we are in the distribution phase, once we've already retired, one of the biggest things that I see happen to people is they've not had the guidance up front to feel like, okay, I have now built a nest egg that's able to sustain the things that matter most to me. For some people, it's travel. For others, it's philanthropy. For others, it's just making sure I don't have to think about this or worry about the essentials. I can, you know, guilt-free do what I want for the grandkids, and I'm not balancing that checkbook every month. So financial freedom looks different for everybody. And where one person may feel wealthy with X amount of dollars, another may feel like, nope, I don't feel like I can do the things that I want to do. Having somebody that can structure that to say you can or you can't, I think is super helpful. So you feel the freedom to go out and do the things that are that matter most.
Yeah. Structured spending plans is what you're talking about. And, you know, I hate to use a dirty word, the B word, budget. But you know, some people would think, oh, budgets aren't for the wealthy. They don't need a budget. That's just for people like you and I. We have to have budgets. Nope. The wealthy budget. They have spending plans, and that's how they do it. And I think that's a great point. That's a biggie. What else? I know my wife and I, our financial situation turned around when we started doing regular monthly budgets. That really keeps us in check.
Yeah, it's one of those things that we think, well, I only have to do that when I don't have the money. It's sort of like if you're trying to get healthier and you follow maybe personal trainers or nutritionists and you think, well, they can probably just eat whatever they want. No, the reason they're healthy, the reason that they are...
They don't do that. Yeah.
They don't do it, or they know how to manage it. They have built in the freedom to know, here's where I could go splurge. I can go to a birthday party and I don't have to worry about, you know, eating that birthday cake, but it's not something I do breakfast, lunch, dinner. You know, I'm not eating donuts for breakfast and cake after every meal. They have a structure. Budget is the exact same thing. Actually, creating a budget gives you more freedom. You just have to maybe shift your mindset a little bit and then see that in play. So wealthy people budget, just like healthy people actually don't get to eat whatever they want. So the other thing I would say, and I know this can discourage some people, but wealthy retirees typically started early. So if you're close to retirement and you think, well, it's too late, it's never too late, but the earlier definitely is better.
Earlier is always better. Right. I mean, the sooner the better. Yeah. Yeah.
You start in your 20s, start in your 30s. You'd be shocked at when you actually look at the power of time and compounding interest. If you, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but you could go and run any kind of simple compounding calculator and show, what if I just put money in between the ages of 20 and 30 and then I stopped and I never added any more to it? What would I retire at? The 20-year-old that invested for those first 10 years is typically going to come out with more money than I started later at 30, 35, 40 and invested for a longer time period. It's because that early power of compounding interest. So that is something that I am really trying to ingrain into the brains of my adult-ish children. And the young clients that I have, the older clients that I have that want that support for their kids, their grandkids, it can make such a big difference. So earlier, the better.
Yeah, that sounds good. The earlier, the better always. So what's the next thing we need to know about?
I think that you really should look at your overall net worth and how much of that overall net worth is in assets that are working for you, mm-hmm. or maybe depreciable assets like a vehicle or a boat or, you know, some of these things that we acquire that are tangible items. If we have a property, for example, well, I'm a big fan of diversifying to real estate. I think we've talked about that on the show before. We own a real estate company. I'm a big believer in diversifying that way. But if it's property that no longer makes sense, if it's a rental or something that's not serving you, it's not generating cash flow, it's kind of draining you right now, let's get rid of it. So we want to free up resources. We want to reduce stress. We want to make sure that we look at our balance sheet and if we look at about 70% or more of our net worth in assets, things that are working toward us, generating either interest or cash flow, that's ideally what we want. If you're under that amount, then maybe we need to make some adjustments.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's huge. Well, is there any other habits you want to talk about before we have to go today, Jamie?
I think the only other thing that I would look at, and this kind of ties into what I just mentioned with real estate, is one big habit of the wealthy is utilizing passive income in creating money streams that don't require constant effort. So that could be dividends from stocks. It could be rental properties. It could be renting out farm ground. Maybe it's interest from bonds or something that you have that's just working for you. That is how wealthy people keep their wealth growing, even when they're not working. Their money is working for them. So if you're not sure what opportunities may apply to you, what's right for you, do I have some assets that I could be utilizing in a different way? That's an area where a financial professional could help you kind of pinpoint, how do I create some passive income for myself, especially as I get near to retirement age?
Perfect. Yeah, I think that's great. Well, Jamie, you've given us a lot to think about, a lot of habits that wealthy people, people who have built their wealth over time, have shared. And I think these are very helpful. But for our listeners, a big part of that is working with someone like yourself. So how can they get a hold of you?
Sure. I think, like I said earlier, the easiest way is to go out to the website. I've talked to several people that have let me know they would skip over setting an appointment with a place that they had to pick up the phone and call over booking online. So that's a younger generation. So if that's you and you're thinking, I need help here, don't worry. You don't actually have to call and speak to anybody. You can go online, ironhorsefinancialservices.com, click the book now button. If you're old school like me and you like to pick up the phone and call, our office number is 620-377-6456. Just let us know what you are hoping to accomplish. We'll set up a time just to talk through next steps with you.
Okay. I want you to read the web address and the phone number again slowly for our listeners out there who may have missed it.
It is ironhorsefinancialservices.com and phone number is 620-377-6456.
All right. Thanks, Jamie. And listeners, that does it for today's episode of Fly on the Wall Finance with our host, Jamie Malm.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
That wraps up another episode of the Fly on the Wall podcast. Join us next time as we continue the conversations and bringing you behind the scenes in the world of finance. And don't forget to stay connected with us on your favorite social media platforms and subscribe wherever you're listening to podcasts so you don't miss an episode. And we will see you next time.
All matters discussed during this show are for informational purposes only. Opinions expressed are solely those of Iron Horse Financial Services and staff. All topics covered are believed to be from reliable sources. However, Iron Horse Financial Services makes no representations as to its accuracy or completeness. This commercial shall in no way be construed as a solicitation to sell securities or advisory services to residents of any other state other than Kansas or otherwise permitted. Topics should be discussed with your financial advisor prior to implementation. Advisory services offered through Iron Horse Financial Services, a registered investment advisor in the state of Kansas. Insurance products and services are offered through Iron Horse Retirement, an affiliated company. Iron Horse Financial Services and Iron Horse Retirement are not affiliated with or endorsed by the Social Security Administration or any other government agency.